I'm Mike Lane. I'm the chair of the Old Library Special Committee. Other members of the committee here today are Leslie McBean Claiborne and Kathy Luz Herrera. And we are expecting Dooley Kiefer to arrive, another member. Also from the legislature tonight is Will Burbank. We are having a little technical difficulties, been trying to web stream this, but we will have audio even if we can't get web stream tonight. We're very pleased to have one of the proposers here tonight, and that is the Cornerstone Group. And we're going to allow them half to three quarters of an hour to make whatever presentation they would like to tell about their response to the RFP. We thank you, first of all, for responding to the RFP and going through the RFEI process, which I know was a little unusual. But it means a lot. It's an important location and building that we've had on the county rolls for a long time, and we're trying to do it carefully. And we're pleased by the people who have submitted, and we'd like to hear more from you tonight.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Would you just introduce yourself and then proceed?
Great. Good evening. My name is Roger Brandt. I'm the president and owner of Rochester's Cornerstone Group. And with me this evening is Carol Oster, who's she's vice president of the organization, and she oversees our development activities. Also today we have Tim Zagarowitz from SWBR Architects, who has been involved with the design of the building for some time, and also Carl Schuler, who's president of Taylor the Builders, and he is our planned contractor for this particular project. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity. This is a project, a piece of real estate that we've been following through the course of time as it's become available. And when the county made a move a number of years ago to abandon this library, we followed it very carefully, and we felt this is a fairly unique piece of property. And when the REFI came out, we were very excited to be included. And we're very happy to be here tonight. We'd like to talk to you a little bit about our design. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about our plans, our timeline, our funding sources. And we think we have a very good team, an experienced team that we think can show you with our history and our experience over the last 20, 25 years in being in business, that we've been able to tackle some very challenging projects and very good projects with good end results. We've been involved in the affordable housing rental business ourselves, Cornerstone Group, for 20 years now, and most of it's been in the western New York area, say from Syracuse westward. We feel like we have a very viable development plan, and we think that we address what is a real need here in the community, and that is some affordable housing for seniors, and we think that this is going to provide a long-term solution. We're going to be committing this building to a regulatory agreement for up to 32 years, so that it will be affordable for a minimum of 32 years, and we feel that this is a commitment to the community, and I think there's because of the need, and we've seen the demand, we see the wait lists at some of the developments here in town, we feel that it's this is a very viable plan. We've sought out financial commitments, and we have commitments to provide funding. We have to show site control before we can go to the next step. So there's some things that we still have some have to fill in as far as our funding commitments. But we've talked to adequate numbers of people who have been funding our projects for years now, and they're very excited to be involved in Ithaca. We think that this also advances the county and the city goals with regard to some mixed housing here in the community. As I said, the development team, the Cornerstone Group, property manager would be our affiliate, Cornerstone Property Managers. Tim's firm, SWBR Architects, would be the design, and then Taylor the Builders would be our contractor. We think that these principals of these firms and each of these organizations has been involved here in the Ithaca community in one way or the other over several years. What we thought we'd do is just look at the redevelopment plan overview. We've submitted a purchase, we've agreed to a purchase offer to the county. We have a commitment to fund that from our financial partner, Raymond James. And then our plan would be to abate the asbestos and the lead hazards, of which there are many, and then demolish the old library structure. And then we'd construct a mixed-use building, which would have 63 affordable rental units for seniors 55 and over. And then we'd have some dedicated space for the Cornell Cooperative Extension to deliver an education program for the seniors. All the rental units will be affordable. I mentioned before that it's a long-term commitment, 30-plus years under the regulatory agreement. And then we'd have 89% of the units, and that's just a mathematical. There wasn't any magic about 89, but if you pick a certain number, that's where you wind up. Of 89 units, 89% would be below 60% of area median income, and we'd have 11% above 61 to 80%, and that's key in our funding sources and also watching and looking at the market and where the incomes of the seniors are that are in need of housing. With regard to our site improvements, which we'll get a little bit more detailed conversation when Tim and Carl speak to you, but we're planning landscaping, a courtyard green space with the seating and the pergola awning. No added improvement, impervious surface over existing libraries. So the plan is really to not increase any of the hard surfaces, but instead try and meet what it is right now or maybe even lessen it. We'd have 16 exterior parking spaces and then 36 interior ground level parking spaces, which are melted into the building on the first floor. This particular area of the city is truly, we feel, spectacular with some of the architecture and this building we're sitting in right now, together with the DeWitt Park, is just beautiful. It's a historic district, and we want to. Our plan was with the design to meet those some of the design standards which have come out as we met with the Landmark Preservation Group some number of months ago. Our plan is a traditional building exterior facade, stone-based brick facade, lap siding, mansard roof with some peak accents to complement the Presbyterian Church here in this four corners area. Our heating, ventilation, air conditioning equipment will be shielded on the rooftop from sight from the ground so that they'll be hidden by the mansard roof. Some of the comments from the Landmark Preservation Group was to try and push it a little bit further back from Court and Cayuga, and we did that. We pushed it back just a little bit more. It's 16 overall foot setback on both Court and Cayuga streets, and then our hard surfaces on the building itself, really looking at a 50% brick and stone front elevations and 90% on all the side elevations.
My name is Tim Zagarowicz, and I'm with SWB Architects. So there's two images on here. Obviously, we have the existing church, and that is the stone we're trying to emulate as much as we possibly can with some of the base of our building. Yeah, I could do that. The image to the left, the larger image, is a site plan. So this is the site plan of our building and project superimposed on an aerial photograph. And what you could see is dashed in red, if you can see that, is the outline of the existing library that will be coming down as part of our project. So as Roger was saying, the impervious area is less with our building and parking lot than what it is currently. So we're not going to increase any runoff. So inside the L, our building is L-shaped, you can see the white roof. We're planning on a white TPO or EPDM, it's a single-ply roofing membrane. That's that mansard, that's the inside of the mansard roof that Roger was talking about. Inside that area will be the condensers for the fire, for the furnaces, as well as a photovoltaic farm on top of the roof that we feel will generate at least one quarter of the energy needs for this this housing project. Inside the L, in that tan rectangle, just south of, I guess, the west leg of the L, north is straight up on the site plan. That is where our courtyard will be. We're going to have a pergola inside there with some raised beds for seniors so they can grow whatever they want out there. They can grow their own vegetables if they wanted to do that. We have sidewalks that connect to the sidewalks at the road. And we have 16 parking spaces, as Roger talked about. So if I can, I'm going to try and point to this. So we come off of Court Street, and we basically were to drive into the building, and I'm sorry for your benefit. I've got to point to this one to address the majority. Sorry, I know. So the 16 parking spaces would occur here. We do have some ADA parking. The access inside the building would occur right here. So there'd be two openings into the building, and the entire first floor, except for a little part right up here at the corner, will all be first floor covered parking. It will be shielded from the row with some decorative mesh treatments that correspond. All those openings, and I'll show you some of the renderings. Once we get to that, they all line up with the openings above. So the rest of it, we're trying to buffer as much as we can. So we'll have some new plantings that occur on the south side. Roger talked about a 16-foot buffer that we asked, and that was actually from the curb line to the building facade. We're also trying to maintain the existing trees that are between the sidewalk and the curb on both streets. So we're making their best effort. We feel we can keep all those existing trees there. Anything from the parking inboard will have to be removed as part of the project. This shot here, our building is further down on the left side at the it's just out of view of the photo, but we just wanted to show the existing church with this. So the next one, these are some perspective shots. This is actually looking straight on at the corner of the building. What we're planning on doing is having a base of stone to match the existing church across the street. We will be selecting a brick that will match what we're going to try and match the context of the neighborhood fabric. In addition to the brick, we have some fiber cement siding. Those will be up in the top gables, and we also have a differentiation between colors. We have a different fiber cement color as well. So we're trying to break up the facade not create different buildings, but just not have such a long facade, try and break the building up. And from this elevated shot, not that you'd see any of the photovoltaics or any of the HVAC equipment. We're just kind of doing a slight bird's eye view of what this corner will look like. You will never see anything above this. We're kind of creating like a bathtub inside the building. So there'll be at least about 4 feet, maybe 5 feet of vertical wall drop. So that will house all of our equipment that's probably no more than 36 inches to 42 inches in height. The other perspective on this is the shot looking into the courtyard. It's a little small for you to see. I apologize for that. But this is the courtyard that they'll have. This is the drive aisle coming in, and then through here is where they'll have access to the undergrade or under building parking. There's nothing in the basement. This is basically a slab-on-grade building. So we have parking on the first floor, and then we've got living space that we'll go into on the next slide. So this is the first floor. Shaded in green. This is where we'll be coming into the building. So we have ingress through the right side. We have egress out through here. We have a stair as required by code at each end of the building. And then we have basically a kind of a commons area. We've got some mechanicals and things like that happen at the main entry. We want to make sure this building has a front entry presence to the neighborhood. Also, we'll have basically a way in at the back here. This plan to the right shaded, kind of almost like pink. These will be residential units. And anything in yellow is circulation, and then anything in I'm not sure what color, that may be a color that kind of matches the parking over here. That will be the common spaces and storage. We also have a community space that will be able to be used. I mean, Carol, if you want to talk about that, or, you know, we're going to let whoever wants to use it, right?
Sure. That will be on the second, third, and fourth floors, that same area. And we were thinking on the second floor, there will be a balcony that comes off that room, and the ability to take an exterior staircase down to the courtyard. And if stairs don't want it, if residents aren't using the stairs, they can just access an elevator down to the garage level and out. The upper floors will be community space as well, and we do have an agreement with Cornell Cooperative to provide educational services. So we will provide that space for them on a regular basis.
Thank you. So just to go on to that, that's basically the L. So there's really no opportunity to get a unit in, but we do have some windows that'll overlook the courtyard below. So this building will have three studio units in it, 54 one-bedrooms, and 6 two-bedrooms. They'll be basically on each side of the corridor, so people have view to the street, some will have view to the courtyard. Again, we talked about stairs at each end, and there'll be an elevator in the core of the building, so it'll be right in the middle of everything for everybody to use. So here's some better perspectives that show a little closer detail. So here's the entrance.
I wondered, are you able to use the cursor for a pointer? Because it only shows up, your pointer only shows up on one screen.
Yeah, no,
I'm sure.
Probably fine. Yeah, certainly. Oh, yeah, perfect. All right, sorry about that.
All right, I just suddenly realized people...
We weren't running away because you all smelled or anything. It's just...
Thanks.
Okay. So this is obviously looking right at the corner, and we want to provide, basically state this is the entrance. This is an entrance to our building. So inside here we'll have some commons area. We kind of have a curve. We're trying to ease the corner, so we actually have a curved facade. The roof will curve with it. And again, this whole entire roof, all around this side is a mansard, so it doesn't go. It's not peaked. I think it's 50 foot is the maximum height, and that's right. We're just below that with the top of the mansard. So we don't need any variance. We're not required to have any variances for height or anything. We're working within the zoning. So what you're looking at is all units. All the fenestration here is all. It's all for units right here. There's no commons area. There are no balconies on the front. We have a little balcony, as Carol talked about, on the back that is kind of, shielded. It's basically out of the street view. It's in overlooking its own courtyard. And this is just another perspective from the street. And, obviously the vegetation that we're trying to maintain, we're keeping all that there. We'll have some foundation plannings as discussed by some boards. So we'll have what we're planning on is curb line, a grassed area with the trees, a sidewalk, and then another planted area for some foundation plannings down both streets. I think that's probably the next one. A couple of close-up interior shots. This is obviously both looking internally, and you can kind of see the covered area that we're going to have outside the second-floor community building or community room, I'm sorry. That'll be covered. There'll be a stair that comes down so people can kind of come up or down that, or they can use the elevator inside. And then this is just showing the planted areas. We're trying to we want to make sure we really did this right and provide a lot of planning areas, the raised garden beds for the seniors, the pergola. We wanted to make this a place where they would really come and really enjoy being in, not just an area where there was a parking lot. We really strive to reduce our parking as much as we possibly could. We put as much in the building as we possibly could. knowing that there isn't as much of a need for parking, but there's still a lot of seniors that were requiring it based on what we're hearing. I can touch on this one. Energy efficiency. This building will be, it's going to go for under a NYSERDA multifamily program. It does provide some incentives to the project in doing so. The version, we're also going for Energy Star version 3.1 or 3.0. I'm not sure which one. Whatever will be in effect at the time. It's a very strict set of guidelines. Deals with energy efficiency, low-flow plumbing fixtures, very tight envelope. Air sealing is extremely important. Furnace and ductwork, air leakage is extremely important. These are very difficult programs. We do it very well. Taylor the Builders does it very well. We feel like we're experts in this realm. We do a lot of affordable housing, and that's just something we're very passionate about. We were very excited to work on this in this project. As part of this, it all requires Energy Star light fixtures. Any kind of appliance, any kind of heating or cooling element like furnaces, they have to be Energy Star rated, which is what we're planning on providing. We talked about the solar power. That's something that we're striving to achieve and see if we want to get a minimum of 25% usage from that. And we're also doing, to the maximum extent possible, we're trying to meet the we can't meet it just because this is affordable and it just doesn't work, and Carl can certainly talk about that later, about the cost of the 2030. We're going to strive as much as humanly possible to meet that challenge. And I don't know if...
Actually, Carol, we have, for the members of the committee, we have copies of this presentation, so that might be easy for you to refer back to what we've been discussing.
Thank you.
Sure. Our philosophy is we look at a project like this, what we'll do is we spend a lot of time walking the neighborhood and researching what was some of the city's goals, what is the neighborhood like, what's the composition, who lives here, and we looked at the goals of the city to try and figure out what do they want in this neighborhood, and certainly the a walkable, well-designed neighborhood exists. The infrastructure is here right now. The public service costs, we think, for this particular project are minimized, and we have some workforce housing. I mean, we've got people 55 and over, seniors, and we're going to be creating some housing for those particular people. We're looking at 120-plus construction jobs. The time period for the development of this is going to be probably slightly over a year. Carl will talk about that a little bit. We will be locally advertising and encouraging bidding by Tompkins County subcontractors. We always use our MBE and WBE subcontractor participation. Our goals are usually between 25% and 30%, and we'll be looking at that for this particular project to make sure that we do have MBE and WBE participation.
Sorry, what is the MBE?
Oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. Minority and Women Business Enterprise.
Thank you very much.
Sure,
of course.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Every business, including this one, is full of lots of letters and abbreviations, so I'll try and take note of that, make sure that I help help out here. The builder, project owner, developer will follow also equal employment policies, and we'll have some permanent on-site staff positions, and we will certainly exceed or meet the livable wage policy that Tompkins County has in place right now.
When you say that, are you talking about during construction, or are you talking about your employees afterwards? Or both?
Both.
Thank you.
So you said the existing affordable housing need in the market area is, there's a huge need. We've looked at the types of demands we've seen at projects like Breckenridge and Poets Landing, and you see these particular wait lists, which are existing right now, and we know that there's a market here, so we're not overly concerned with that. You know, in the past 3 years, 132 units of rent and income restricted housing has been constructed in the market area. And we look at the, I think Breckenridge has over 125 households on their wait list right now. And that's only been, it's been about a year, perhaps, since that's been completed. So our affordable housing proposal addresses the housing needs of an aging population. I guess so. Between 2005 and 2014, only 40% of the targeted units affordable for moderate income housing has been built in the county. So there's some good empirical data, but also your common sense as we look at the aging population, and we can tell that the need is there. With regard to our financing plan, it's not uncommon for these particular projects to have multiple funding sources, and this one will be no exception. We finished a project a couple years ago which had 12 different funders, which was a challenge, but this won't go that far. We've, as I mentioned before, Raymond James is an investor in our developments. They acquire the low-income housing tax credits, and they become our financial partner. They've issued a commitment to provide funding for the purchase, which will take place before we get to a final closing, as the meeting the needs or the requests of the RFP. Our total project costs are estimated at $16.8 million. That includes everything from acquisition all the way through working capital as we put the project together, as well as the construction and soft costs. Project financing will be loans, grants, and equity from the sale of some low-income housing tax credits, which are available through New York State. That's really the foundation of affordable housing, good affordable housing in New York State and actually across the country, and has been for over 25 years. All the lenders have been contacted to receive project information, and the authorization by the legislature for the execution of the purchase contract will be required to complete and obtain the final funding commitments, which have been lined up and are ready, but we need the final commitment. So we've, as I said before, this particular team of Taylor, SWBR, and Cornerstone have worked in this arena developing multifamily housing, and we think their expertise and our track record speaks for itself, but we're very, very excited to be a part of the mix here as you make a final decision. Now, to ensure the rental affordability of this particular project, we do have a request, and each of the affordable housing projects that are developed have some form of tax relief, which helps to keep the rental cost down for the residents. Those particular methods, if you think about it, the operating costs for an apartment project are going to be very similar, whether it's market rate or affordable. Our key is really we have very favorable financing. 60 to 70% of our financing comes from equity we receive, in this case from Raymond James, who may sell the tax credits to a Google or Verizon or some organization that could use the federal low-income housing tax credits. In order to manage our property to low operating income or low operating expenses, the pilot or a payment in lieu of tax agreement is being requested for the project's city, school, and county taxes. A request is for $600 per year per unit fixed real estate tax cost in year one with 3% annual increases. The special district charges or embellishments are not exempt, so those would be paid. But the $600 per unit is what we're requesting for this.
For what period?
For the tenure of the loan or the project. So it would be the regulatory period, the 32 years.
For 32 years or
yeah.
10 years?
For 32 years.
Okay, the entire, okay.
Yes. And that's what the funders are looking for. The funders are looking for, very important, a commitment from the municipality to become involved and be a player and a partner in our particular transaction. The project rents are projected at this point to be, the rents for the studio would be $825 per month. One-bedroom units would be a range of between $887 and $975 per month, and the two-bedroom rents would be between $1,064 and $1,200 per month.
Does that include utilities, heat, lights, water and sewer?
Yes. And they're mostly one bedrooms. Here's our development timeline. And our hope would be that we would be finishing up the leasing a couple years from now. What we're looking at right now is when the December, we'd be notified in July. In December, the county legislature would take action and authorize the transfer of the property. We would be ready approximately 30 days later in January to purchase the property. We'd have to finalize our construction documents, construction bidding, and then we'd have a closing sometime in the spring, roughly 1 year from now. The abatement and demolition of the old library would take place during the summer. It'd be the June, July, and some of August timeframe. And then the construction period would be about 10 months, and then the unit lease up. We say 4 months, but it's just a matter of processing because we're very confident that there'd be a list of people who would be interested in the particular project once it commences construction. So all in all, approximately 2 years time frame from today. Just a little bit about Cornerstone. I was a banker with Chase up in Rochester. In 1990, I left and started this business. It's been a very quick 25 years, as we all know how quickly most of us know in the room here how quickly 25 years goes. So we've done a multitude of different type of housing developments, but we've seemed to have found a focus. We have found a focus in the affordable housing arena. It's something that we get a great deal of enjoyment out of. It's very challenging, but opportunities like this are one that we could certainly have a very significant impact in the community, and it's something that not a lot of developers do. There's not a lot of people that do what we do because it's challenging, and it takes a lot of patience, a great deal of patience, especially as dealing with the government.
I would also like to add that I worked on three projects in Ithaca. I was the developer representing the owner for three conifer projects. I was the project director for Ellis Hollow during the rehab while I secured the financing and was involved during the construction. I also worked on the Linderman 3 and Linderman 4 projects. Secured the financing for those for Conifer and oversaw the Linderman 3 construction. And that was all three projects are 9% tax credit financed. This project, we're proposing to do a 4%. The 9%, I'm sure you may know that that is a long process and it's highly competitive. Breckenridge was financed in part by 9% credits. However, we are looking at a 4% tax credit deal for DeWitt. That has an open round window. It's also work, and they only issue bonds a few times a year. So we do, when Roger, back to the timeline, he said we would have a closing next May or so because you have to wait until the state groups several projects and does one big bond issuance. So, again, we're proposing a non-competitive open round tax credit financing as a cornerstone for DeWitt.
The numbers do add up, but we've developed just in the last 10 years a couple hundred million dollars worth of these types of projects, and we're very proud and very blessed to have the opportunity to be in this particular business. This was an interesting project. I just wanted to talk about a couple projects in particular. This was one where we purchased two projects from the Rochester Housing Authority. We tore them down. We de-densified a neighborhood in Rochester. We tore down 111 units, and we replaced them with 177 of these different types. So we had townhouse units and single-family homes. We built over 100 single-family homes back into the neighborhood, thereby putting the four- and five-bedroom units out into the neighborhood where they have yard space and private space, their own driveways, and then put the two- and three-bedroom units on the sites where the former Housing Authority projects were. It was a great partnership with the city. The city put a number of several million dollars into roads, roundabout, and really changed the neighborhood significantly over by the Cornhill neighborhood in Rochester, not far from University of Rochester in the river. This was a project we built utilizing a couple different funding sources, our HUD 202 monies, as well as 9% tax credits. This was a senior project for very low-income residents. And this particular project was similar funding sources. This was a project we did with a group, the Episcopal Senior Life Communities out of Rochester. It was 40 units, and we built it adjacent to an existing project a couple of years ago. But I'd like to have Carl take the microphone and tell us a little bit about his experience.
You're about 10 minutes maybe, and then we probably should get to questions.
Thanks again for having us. I'm Carl Schuler. I'm president of Taylor the Builders. We've been around for 30 years working we actually work all over the country, but primarily we work in upstate New York and western New York. Over the years, we've always had a large portion of our portfolio be for not-for-profits, both housing, daycare, day treatment centers. Some of our clients have been, Lifetime Assistance, Heritage Christian Services, Pathstone. We've been involved on the front end of projects like this where we're at risk budgeting with the possibility of never getting a project, but we feel that they're worthwhile projects in the end because these projects typically service the elderly, the developmentally disabled, and I think this is the type of project that fits our model every year to have a couple of these in queue. So like I said, we've been doing this for 30 years. Some of the projects that we've done that are apartment or urban related, we did a project here, renovation for McGraw House. We did that a few years ago. That was a challenge because everybody was living in there, so it was a 10-phase project. And because McGraw has no, occupancy, it was very difficult to move people around. They have a constant waiting list. They're always full. There's always people waiting. And that was a nice project in the sense that we turned a building that was built in the 70s into something that was much more energy efficient, cleaner. We added the rooftop garden, elevator renovations, but it was a top to bottom, every square inch of the building remodeled. We're working on a project right now in Tompkins County that's going to be a market rate, a senior project. This one is going to be, it's going through the approval process and, the design process and zoning process, and we're hoping to break ground before the end of the year. This is a project we did in Rochester, very similar to this in the sense that it was a dense urban site. We had zero lot clearance, a lot of involvement with the city, just like what we would do here. We have neighborhood meetings. We video document, we photo document all the buildings around us. We do condition reports. We do we do traffic patterns so that everybody knows how we're coming and going. We do this so that in the end we can leave people what they got, what they started with. In the event that something happens, that we're going to take care of it. That's typically how we go about it. So we'll have typically we have a community meeting with the neighbors somewhere close by where they can get there easily, and then we go around and we document everything that's going on and do the traffic patterns. This project was a multiple building project, and it was, I think it was a total of about 400,000 square feet of building, and it involved some underground parking, above apartments, retail. This was a pure a senior project, suburban, but it's kind of very similar in style, an apartment unit that we would be doing here. But the point is that it was a large project and a tight timeline, and we were able to pull it off. So just to give you a little summary, we've been doing this for 30 years. We work a lot in a lot of different communities around New York State. We're very used to urban construction techniques and the needs of the neighbors. We work with the neighbors well. Our policy is we're always there. Our door is always open. I was walking a site the other day as a cleanup, as the end of the site, and an old gentleman came out and he just wanted to talk. And, we always have time to talk. And it's our policy that we're there for people if they got something on their mind.
Thank you.
I'll be brief. I know we got a couple minutes left. Just to go back to SWBR's experience, we have 80 professionals on staff. We probably only have about 15 of them are purely administrative. The rest are all either, most of them are design professionals, architects. There's a couple structural engineers, a couple interior designers. We have 27 lead APs on staff. So we went through, we took the lead, we all took the lead exam. We live it. It's not like we just don't have the credentials after a name. Even if it's not a lead project, this one is. Not all projects are lead. We still try and do as many sustainable things as the budget really can allow.
Can I stop you there?
Yep.
So you would be trying to get the actual certification, not just build to their specs.
That's correct. This project will be a lead for homes. I probably skipped over it. I'm sorry. On the sustainable components of this. In addition to Energy Star and NYSERDA, this will be a LEED for Homes project. We are more than likely will easily get silver certification or a silver. I don't know if we'll get more than that. It all depends. That'll be the minimum we would get. I probably can skip this one. I kind of just touched on that one. This is a project we did for St. John's Brickstone that just finished construction last year. It had a greenhouse component to it, a lot of independent senior living. There's also cottages that were associated with this. You can go to the next one. Just as Asbury Point, this is all senior independent living, wood frame construction. Just to reiterate, this is all that my studio does at SWBR. The only thing we do is housing, multifamily housing, whether it's senior, affordable, or market rate. That's all we do. We know very well. Next one. We saw that one already. This one here, we did not do the design for it, but we did a peer review. So another architect designed this. We basically did a third party review. And we basically critique their documents. We look through for code review, for energy, structural. We look through the whole thing. In addition to that, and it's under construction now, it's about $30 million worth of work. There is a senior, there's a two-story senior independent living building. I think it's somewhere around 35,000 square feet. It's under construction now. We are doing the CA monitoring for that. So we have an expert in our office that comes down here a few times a month to watch how things are going. That's it.
Great. Thank you, Tim. So just to conclude, we want to thank you very much for the opportunity to be here tonight and throughout the last many months. We do think that this particular project we feel very strongly is what you are looking for. I think keep in mind the regulatory period. You know what you're going to do. This is going to be affordable housing. It will be monitored. There's many funders, and they will come and they will do their inspections and make sure that it is being managed appropriately and according with the regulatory agreement. And it's not something that we could change courses after 10 years. This is something that we're going to be obligated to run it just as we've talked about here. So we think that the timeline from start to finish now, 2 years, we think because of our funding sources will be very rapid and should be very competitive with regard to the timeline relative to other considerations which you have in front of you. So thank you again for your time and effort, and we look forward to answering any questions you may have.
Thank you. That was interesting. How I'd like to proceed now is I would like to begin with the opportunity for questions from the members of the committee and legislature who are here, and also from our county staff if there are questions there. We'd like to spend, maybe half an hour doing that, and then we're going to open it up and allow questions, I've used the word not dissertations, from the members of the public, but if there are questions that folks would like to have, we're going to do that. And I think we did solicit questions from the general public in our press release, and I think we have at least one, and we'll come to that at some point. So I'm going to open it up to our group. Leslin, looks like you got ready to go.
No, I'm not ready to go.
I have a very simple, I have two questions right away. One is very simple. In your presentation, you had a slide that gave the rents for the different size accommodations, but I didn't see any square footage attached to those different ones, and I'm sure you could give that very quickly.
Yes.
And in connection with that, I'm wondering, I realize that the McGraw House was something you had to work with, but I'm wondering how the square footage of the units that you're designing compare to the size of the units in McGraw House that I'm familiar with.
If you could bear with us a second, we will get
the answer. Take your time.
Okay. Yes. I'll give you a separate question, which
sure.
While you're doing that. This has to do with the construction itself. I think I read somewhere in one of your presentations that you do a certain amount of construction off-site and bring things in. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
And could you explain that, please?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain things on the project that they're prefabricated. Some wall panels. There are certain things that we would bring in off, fabricate off-site. And part of the reason is because it's a tight site, that's why we do it. It minimizes the amount of time during the day that you're making a noise, so you're doing as much as you can off-site. Then you bring it in, and the crews are assembling panels or sections of the building, during regular working hours. It allows you to, again, cut the same amount of same crews, same guys. It's just they're doing it some of it off-site. Now, a lot of times that can either be done in a local fabrication yard or lumber yard. Like, for example, on the project we just did in Rochester, the local lumber yard provided yard space for us to fabricate the stuff so that we didn't have to do it right in the neighborhood.
So you're not far enough along with this to know exactly where those things would be taking place.
No, because
that's
the building's
fine.
Not finished design.
Sure.
And it's the concept.
Thank you.
I did want to mention we did allow time at the end if there are questions that come up that need to be discussed having to do with your confidential information. We would go into executive session for that. So we don't want to, if you feel uncomfortable with a question that comes along, just say and later on we can do that in executive session.
I can address the square footages question. The studios would be 500 square feet. The one bedrooms would be 650 square feet. And the two bedrooms would be 800 square feet.
What's the one bedroom again?
500.
No, the studio is 500.
Yeah. I didn't hear the question.
One bedroom is 650.
650. Oh, okay.
Can we restate the question, Leslin?
Could you repeat the square footage again?
Yes, the studios are 500, one bedrooms are 650, and the two bedrooms are 800.
Thank you.
And did you happen to remember how that compares to McGraw House?
He was involved in McGraw House. And I can't vouch for the two bedrooms because the two bedrooms there are a little odd.
Yes.
But the one bedrooms are about 650 square feet.
Okay, thank you.
Will?
Got a bunch of questions, and some are real quick. The HVAC is going to be shielded visually. It will also be. Will that also be a shielding in terms of audio effect on the adjacent neighbors?
I'll take that one off. One.
Thank you. Secondly, you mentioned community rooms that would be generally accessible. Is that just for residents of the building, or would it be for the larger community?
Generally, it's for the residents.
It's the building.
However, what winds up happening with these projects is the neighborhood and the community certainly become closely aligned with the particular development.
So there's a potential for it to be.
Yes, there's interaction, much interaction between the community. So it's not unusual to have blood drives or health fairs or things like that at our community rooms or community buildings.
Okay. You mentioned Cooperative Extension Association of Tompkins County doing programming there. Are you just providing the space, or are you actually providing for the support for the programming as well?
Yeah, we're just doing the space.
So in the event that they did not have the resources to continue that programming, is there what would happen?
We had started down the road with another organization, and my guess is we would seek out other type of programming for the residents, for the seniors.
So your goal is to have some age-appropriate programming.
Right.
Okay, and finally, you mentioned that you did not feel that you would be able to meet the 2030 district goals. You're the Silver LEED certified, but in terms of the energy standards, energy self-sufficiency, I gather you're falling short. How far short, and is there any ability to improve on that?
Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, we've carried the design so far. I don't think we're at the point right now where we can define for you how short or how close we are. But Tim.
Yeah, and I may need Carl to help me out a little bit too, but we're going to do as much as we possibly can. We've put PV panels on the roof, but we still need, we can't put enough solar power on here to power up a heating system. Right now we're a gas-fired furnace, and to answer your question, your first question, I don't think we answered it. The furnaces are integral. Each unit has their own furnace, as required by NYSERDA and some of the funders. So the furnace will be inside the unit. You won't hear that at all. And the condensers for the cooling aspect will all be housed on the roof, and you will not hear anything. It'll all be up four stories in the air. So to try and answer your question, we're not at that point right now, but just the numbers for a completely net zero building, just we have to still rely on the grid and the gas supply. We can't totally decouple from it based on, you know, our performa. And I don't know if you guys want to add on to that a little bit.
You know, at times design is at odds with meeting these goals. You know, if we make this building a big flat roof and a lot of surfaces.
If you could use the mic, please.
If we make a building a big flat roof with a lot of surfaces that we could get more solar on, we could do that. But, you know, we're trying to match the character of the neighborhood. If we start covering the building in a different way, it's not going to work. So there are some aspects of design that are at odds with each other. So we're trying to utilize as much as we can to achieve those goals. And like Tim said, we're going to have gas furnaces, but pretty much, you know, our goal is to get, you know, up to 25% solar for our electric usage. The rest of the equipment, again, is evolving every day. It's like we haven't picked out light fixtures. Why haven't we picked out light fixtures? I mean, I was in a meeting today. You know, it's LEDs are changing every day. I mean, it's daily, you know, weekly. And so we're just not there yet.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was just really amazed. You say the regulations require separate furnaces for each apartment rather than central heating?
Yeah, the funders will.
Any idea why?
I think it's, I don't know if it's just they want everyone to kind of pay their own utilities, pay their own. So I'm not sure. I don't know what the reasoning is.
But you said that they were. They were
going to be included, but yeah,
included
they require it. Yeah, this is an HCR. HCR
is New York State funding guidelines. They have design guidelines, and this is
community renewal.
They all have to have their own individually controlled units. And what we're trying.
I can understand individual controls, but I just didn't understand why you couldn't have. Seems like a central heating would be more efficient of some kind.
We tend to agree with you.
I got you.
I'm going to follow up, if you would, because actually all three of my questions got asked. But I just want to make sure I understood correctly the HVAC system on the roof covered. So that is going to mitigate any sort of outside noises. Is that correct? Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about parking? It sounds to me like you've got parking spaces for about half of the apartments.
52.
Use your microphone.
52 parking spaces, and they'll be used by the residents. And we have 63 units, so we're a little short. Not everybody will have one, and we will have to have a lottery if there are more need or want than available.
What happens in our senior developments is that average age, this is available for people 55 and older. The average age of the projects that we're building now usually tends to be in the high 70s, and many people don't have their cars anymore. So I think the ratio is something closer to like maybe 70% of people have their cars, because it's all driven by the average age of what we're finding in these different developments that we've built. So they're probably not going to see 63 cars or 65 cars. You're going to see something less than that. I would have guessed for 63 units, you're probably going to have something like 40 cars, 45 cars.
You know, we'll also be encouraging our residents to use the public transportation, which is very good here in the city.
I think it's that ratio, I think, is in keeping with what McGraw has, too.
I'm from Dryden, and we have a senior housing area out there. And when it first started many years ago, often there would be couples in the units. And the changes in the requirements through USDA have made it nearly impossible for a couple to qualify to be in these apartments. Are we going to run into the same kind of a situation with your regulations here? So that people who might want to live there as a couple might not qualify because of their income?
As you look at our, going back to, we talked about 89%, be 60% and below, and the area median income here is approximately $77,000. So for a family of four, is how they do the area median income. So if we're at 50 to 60% of, call it $75,000, let's say it's 60% of $75,000, you're allowed somewhere around the 45, maybe as much as pushing $50,000 per year total income. There are going to be some people that are priced over that, but remember we have another, I say 11%. So 11% is like 7 or 8 units that would be up over and above that 60% of area median income. So in answer to your question, there will be some people priced out, but there will be enough, well, we believe that there's, demographically, there's enough couples that have incomes, even if there's a husband and wife, you're talking pension and Social Security, that'll be able to qualify.
I'd also like to add, under that USDA RD program, I believe, they have a requirement to fill units from the lower income earner, yeah, strata, thank you. So they have wait lists for households up to 30% AMI, up to 50, 60, and then the next available unit goes to the household that needs it at the lower income band. Um, I do have the income ranges for our DeWitt. Yes, sure. For the studios, a one-person household, $33,000 a year. I'm just going to round the numbers.
That's a maximum?
Yes, for a one-person household for the studios. And at that higher rent level, it's $44,000. For our two-person households for studios, it's $38,000. I got to put my glasses on. $50,000. For our one bedrooms, one person household, again, $33,000 to $44,000. Two person, again, $37,000 to $50,000 a year. For our two bedrooms, we need a two person minimum household. That's $37,000 to $50,000 a year. Our three person, households would be allowed to be in the two bedroom units. That's $42,000 to $56,000 a year. And we do allow four persons and a two-bedroom, and the income band is $47,000 to $63,000.
Thank you.
Mike?
Kathy.
Thanks. My name's Kathy. I live downtown in what's known as Fall Creek. And Leslin, who spoke to you earlier, this project is actually in her district. A lot of people in my district have a whole lot of interest in this, not just because we walk by every day, but because people are being priced out of their homes. So I've had, just like everybody on the legislature, has had tremendous interest. We really appreciate y'all responding to our concerns in the ways that you've shaped your new proposal. And I just wanted to tell you that it's made the decision harder, but it's also made, like y'all talked about, the community benefits are greater. I have some questions. A lot of them may be in this material, and I apologize. For example, I was reading about the general contractor and Taylor Builders.
Correct.
And I'm interested as a union member in knowing if your subs or if your business utilizes union contractors. And I know that you can't say for sure right now who's going to respond, but you have a general idea, and it would be helpful to know for us just because that allows people with good wages and benefits and pension packages to be able to secure work on a project like this that's right at home. A lot of our members are traveling right now, and it's kind of it's a sad thing.
Well, they're traveling because it's because development opportunities aren't here in this county or otherwise. I'm going through it on another project because development regulations are very difficult. Other communities that I'm experiencing this are more open to projects than maybe some other communities. So it allows those communities, like, you know, Buffalo right now is booming.
Yes, it is.
At Rochester, there's a lot of work in Rochester. And the reason is because a lot of the regulatory handcuffing has been taken off because the idea is we want to get people working, we want to get some of these projects off the ground. That project that I showed you in Rochester, that was all done. That was a posted wage job. So we that was all a certified payroll project. And so the answer to your question is yes, it's open to all members. Our employees, I cannot pay even the employees. You know, we're not signatory, but I cannot pay people what some unions are paying. Because I can't retain those employees. We have, you know, our workforce is small, but we have a benefit package that it's equal to better than the unions. All our projects are open to union contractors, and on that project in particular in Rochester, it was about 65% union contractors and about 35% not. And it was just because that's what the market allowed. For example, the bricklayers could not provide us enough labor. The painters union could not provide us enough labor.
Thank you.
They just couldn't provide us the labor, so we had to go outside the market to bring people in because people weren't there.
We hear that a lot, and what I'd like to ask is the people that you'll be bringing from Rochester, do you have any idea about those?
I won't be searching to bring people from Rochester.
Oh,
I'll be looking in this market.
I understood, according to the paperwork, that there was a percentage of the workforce that would be coming here. Maybe I misunderstood.
No, I mean it's open because I need to provide manpower to do the job. So, if you know, for example, in that job, you know, I had just like yesterday, I had a meeting with the Carpenters Union about another project. I'm looking for the commitment from these people that they can provide me the help. I can't sign a contract with somebody and say, okay, I'm going to sign this contract with one of your members, and then three people show up.
I understand. Listen, there's a lot of interest here locally, and I'm sure that some of the local business agents will be in touch with y'all.
Yeah, and we welcome it because my challenge to them is get me the labor.
I have another question, and it has to do with the notion of affordable housing. To some people, affordable housing means cheap, and it would mean sometimes like cheap lighting fixtures or the plumbing, the flooring, and the trim being of a lesser quality. Can y'all speak to that?
Yeah, I mean,
Tim's probably the best one to speak to that.
Yeah, I can speak to that, and thank you for bringing that up because I was thinking about this. We are saying affordable a lot here, and affordable used to mean a lot of different things 30 and 40 years ago. It's altogether different, and we have a lot of codes. We have regulations, handbooks that we have to follow. There's really, other than the rent structure, there's probably nothing affordable in here. This really could be a market rate project. It's just the rent structures, the level of quality of materials. We're matching because we want to. We're matching the neighborhood fabric. Those aren't cheap materials. We've got a stone base. We've got a fair amount of brick on this, fiber cement. There's no vinyl on this job. We're doing, you know, we got asphalt shingles on just to kind of match some of the fabric. We're not going clay tile or anything like that, but the materials in here are meeting or exceeding code. There's,
how about in the units themselves?
In the units, I mean, there will be plastic laminate countertops, but, I mean, there'll be wood cabinets. They'll be very durable. There'll be a very good quality construction.
All plywood boxes. I mean, I can just buttress what Tim's saying. He's absolutely right. In our market rate projects right now, the only difference between the market rate and the affordable, I just did a large market rate project and then just was followed up by an affordable project, and the only difference was the countertops. I mean, the cabinets were of the same high quality. The light fixtures were the same high quality. The only difference was the tops were traditional plastic laminate like a lot of people have in their house versus in the other ones they were stone. You know, in the market rate, but that was it. Other than that, every fixture was the same.
Are we talking Kohler plumbing, or are we talking?
No, it's good. Yeah, it's American Standard or Kohler. It's all good stuff. It's all good quality fixtures, and because that's what the market demands. What separates the project,
fantastic.
Again, this is an HCR funded project, and it's the HCR that defines the income.
Okay. Another question I have about affordable housing is some of us have experienced that the management in affordable housing can be rigid, especially with regard to some of the problems that older people as they are transitioning encounter. And we'd just like to know if you can talk to us a little bit about that, because we're an opinionated lot. And I think that the people in these units would be no less opinionated and would like management that's responsive to their requests and needs insofar as is possible.
Sure. Let me spend the first give the first response. And first is we are obligated, I guess, our company has to provide financial guarantees to the funders that we're going to keep this property, first of all, lease it to appropriate people, age and income qualified, and then we have to maintain it for the life of the loan and for the because again these loans we're getting are 30 years, so we're really hooked into the affordable funders for a long period of time, and so we have my company is going to be providing financial guarantees. I'm going to make sure that it's done right. This is a senior project. There are some challenges. It's a different project than if it was a family project. But the senior project does have challenges as well. We pride ourselves with some of the property managers that we hire. We will be looking to hire, obviously, people here in Ithaca to run this project with supervision coming from district managers who might be covering Ithaca and might be covering Shortsville, Canandaigua, Clifton Springs. So, but really, it's going to be local people taking care of the management. But again, we're supervised. We're watched very carefully. We're not just saying we're going to make this affordable. It's going to be affordable, and we're obligated to it. And we're going to be monitored every year when the state comes in and the Raymond James tax credit equity investors and the mortgage lenders. So we've got to run it very efficiently and very well. But we also encourage the formation of a tenant association, only because it makes a lot of sense, so that we don't have – there's a unified group, and if there's issues or there are problems – the person who runs our property management company is very strong, and she'll hit the issues head on, and she'll correct it. So we're very very comfortable with the management side of things.
That's very helpful. Thank you. I just got a couple of small ones left. About the mechanicals, are all the mechanicals going to be on the roof, or are you using the mansards to house some of it, or will there be mechanical rooms on each floor? This is just a personally curious question, but it also helps me in terms of figuring out the layout and maintenance issues that sometimes might arise, because y'all talked about one there being each one being individually controlled. That has its pluses and minuses, and we all know that. I'm okay. Just curious.
Yeah, so we are – there'll be a furnace in each apartment. There'll be a mechanical room. The main probably the first floor will probably have the main mechanical room, but it's not a very large room. It probably will have one or two furnaces to take care of the common spaces, because we got to bring fresh air into the common spaces and take care of, like, the community room, say, for example. The condensers will be on the roof. There probably will not be many things other than that on the roof. Obviously the solar panels, I'm sorry. But we always start with furnaces, just because, again, this is a floor, we got to keep our numbers down. That's why we have furnaces in each one of the apartments. They're in a locked closet that the maintenance person typically just has the keys. You don't need people going in and out of them. The maintenance, you know, they're going to take care of that. Also, furnaces are the easiest of all the pieces of equipment for heating and cooling to take care of. Everyone knows about furnaces. They don't necessarily always know about heat pumps, VRFs. You know, those things start costing double, and not just everybody in the phone book knows how to take care of them. So there will be sub-panel rooms. There'll probably be an additional furnace closet on each floor, or a couple of them, to take care of the common areas.
That's helpful. And there will be a maintenance, like a slop sink or something, on each floor for cleaning?
I'm not really sure. We haven't totally figured that out. I believe we'll probably will have a janitor closet and a trash room on each floor.
That's good, because, you know, it's difficult having those things go up and down the elevator, especially when you have seniors, and I appreciate that. You were going to say something, so I was waiting for you.
Yes, we will definitely have an area on the ground floor for maintenance, for a maintenance shop.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Okay. Close to the last. Deconstruction. You know, y'all were talking about LEED certification. I know that LEED deconstruction is very expensive, but we do have some local interests in. Do you have any interest, or is there any possibility of any of the deconstruction being done in a less than traditional way, or let's say more than traditional way, with regard to LEEDs?
Let me start, and I'll let Carl talk. The last thing we wanted to do is, you know, take the building down. But we did many different reiterations of how many units can we fit into this. The yield was not there for the amount of construction. It's a building laid out for a library. It's very, very difficult to put units in. So we tried a bunch of different ways to get as many units in there as possible, tried putting a floor in, a lot of different ways.
I'm okay with that. I'm talking about taking down
and
hauling out the other stuff.
I just want to make that point, but I'll let Carl talk about the.
Yeah, I mean, one of the dilemmas with regard to having people go in and demo is the abatement process. I mean, that building has a lot of things that need to be abated. I mean, pretty much everything to the concrete needs to be abated. I mean, so if you look at the budget and the numbers, we actually have real hard numbers on abatement. It's over $1 million. And that building is going to have to be closed off, sealed off, and removed. And by the time we're done with the abatement, there isn't going to be much left other than the concrete structure itself. Because pretty much it touches everything. Whether it's caulk, asbestos-containing materials, that's just the way it is. So it would be great if we could do that, and I think once we get further into it, we can look and see if that's a possibility. But pretty much when we're done with the abatement, it's going to be a shell.
So reusing that material if it's a...
Yeah, I mean, it's like we always like to try to resell windows. We do that a lot. But if it's an old building and it's covered with PCB caulk, we can't reuse it. You know, we do that a lot. We do a lot of reselling. By nature, I'm a pack rat. So when I walk into a building, I look at what I can take for myself, and then we look at what we can save or reuse or resell.
Not it myself. I bought some stuff when they so redid Sage Hall.
But when it's, like I said, when it's PCB.
One last question. Just to clarify, this is going to be based on income, not assets, right?
Yes, that's true. Assets do fit into the formula of income. By statute, what we have to do is we consider all income, but if someone happens to have $1 million in the bank, there's a percentage that you take of that $1 million and gets added to their income.
How about property?
I'm sorry?
Property.
Well, yes.
If someone had a duplex downtown. would that asset be considered as part of this formula as income or just the rental income that they might be getting?
Income. It all gets there's a translation of assets into income in the IRS statute.
I'm thinking about this because I've watched Breckenridge and anyway, I can't speak to that without sounding flip and not knowing what I'm talking about. Great. I really appreciate your patience with me. A lot of these questions inform not just this decision but the perspective in general about this proposed project. So thank you for your help.
Great question, by the way.
I got a quickie, then I want to get Will and Leslin, and then I want to try to get some more questions from the outliers here. Noise. Are you going to have to do pile driving? This is a residential neighborhood with, we have a bed and breakfast next door and senior citizens services next door. What do you think about noise?
Now, because of the nature of our structure, it's a light structure. It's not going to be, think about what's there now. Our structure is going to weigh about a third of that, what's there now. So our plan is to bring in engineered fill to bring it up to our foundation level and use just widespread footings. Actually, the requirement for the offset that the city came up with actually helps us a lot. So, we looked at it and we said, oh, wow, this is great. It allows us to do a more traditional footing.
Thank you. Will?
Another noise question. In terms of your construction technique, what is going to be the noise between units and above, and what will residents be hearing their neighbors?
Well, per code, we'll have an STC of 50. That'll be that'll be our horizontal separation as well as our tenant separation walls. That's just 5/8 drywall on each side of a stud with resilient channel in it. That's where we're planning on right now. The flooring will be a little bit, flooring usually is more the problem with foot traffic and everything. That'll be somewhere in the area of I think it's a 58. And essentially what we do is we have 3/4 inch gypsum underlayment on top of 3/4 inch subfloor. That's whatever our wood structure is. It's probably open web wood joists. Then we'll have resilient channel and then 5/8 drywall. So that one in combination of maybe a carpet and maybe it's got a pad on it. That gets us our 58 or possibly 60 between units horizontally.
Okay. Thank you.
That being said, we do have a requirement that all tap dancing seniors must be on the first floor.
Great. There goes my mom.
Leslie?
Two more. I'm sorry. And these are completely unrelated. But what happens after the affordability period? Does it revert to market rate or...
At the end of 30 years, the plan is to refinance and continue the affordable index, if you will,
yeah.
And keep it affordable. Ordinarily, we will commit to 30 years. It has been done. It's been longer in periods, but in terms of at the end of 30 years, much of the financing would be paid off, but there still could be some financing which is going to have to be refinanced. And if you can't refinance, you could refinance with the state with some of that debt. Remember, there's some soft debt in here, the 1% interest-only monies. You're going to have to deal with that. So I guess at the end of 30 years, I'll have to see what I'm going to do with it.
So your intent would be to continue it as affordable, but there's no ability to know that would be possible.
Well, the regulatory period is really, it's 32 years is what we're planning.
Okay. And finally, this is a little bleak, but Carl, you mentioned that the regulatory obstacles that are many places but that are not in some. Can you just cite one or two that you feel that we should be considering in terms of removing?
No, I wasn't actually pointing out any. Yeah. I was using it as a generality on why some markets are doing well versus other. And I'm not pointing to any because actually I think this community has been very open to new development as by nature of the projects that have been approved. So I was just saying that in a general sense that, the hot markets draw the labor because the work's there and they're busy. And, I think what drives the market here on the construction side is your two main, universities. And so they pull a lot of the labor out of the private construction market. Because there's always a lot going on there. So, but
I'm not building that much right now, though.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that was not anything to do with one community versus the other. It's just, you know, you see the hot pockets. The project I just did in Rochester that was very large was $120 million. The city really, I mean, they had the mat open. They really, every step of the way, they had people on it all the time making sure that the project was going forward, mm-hmm. both from an approval standpoint, permitting standpoint. I mean, there was no obstacle. Every time something came up, teams of people were on it to make it happen.
Thank you.
Leslie.
So I'm going to start with a comment that I would share with every presenter that comes before us. The communication with our neighbors, our community, is extremely, extremely important in a project like this. And so as open and transparent as you can be with communicating with neighbors really does matter. You know, we may not think that it's as noisy as we thought it would be, but then you hear from neighbors just about how noisy it is. So we just communicate. And then I have a few questions. Some of this have already been asked, but I have some follow-up. Indulge me, if you will, and just give me a sense of what a one-bedroom unit would look like. What would be in there?
Well, we don't have any unit plans per se to show you, other than the blow-ups, the overalls. But you would... What we like to do for senior projects is I don't like to have a corridor that goes straight down. These are very long corridors. It looks like we are showing those. We can't zoom in on that, right? Probably not. But what I do is when you come in from the corridor to your hallway or to your door, what we like to do is recess the door about 8 inches, and we like to put a little package shelf next to the door on the latch side. Sometimes we put like a little recess and we put a smaller light. We've got lighting down the corridor, but we like to put like a little light there. And seniors always seem to personalize them. They don't just use them for a package shelf. There's a vase there. There's somebody's grandkids made some things and they put them there, and all the people write notes there and leave them there. That's kind of just the entry. That's just talking about the entry going into the unit. We do that on every single one of them. And then coming in right or left, because obviously we've got, you know, one unit, then we get a mirror, we back up plumbing. We're trying to be very, very economic about this. You'll have your kitchen, and usually what we do is an L-shaped kitchen. So you come in, you'll have your refrigerator, your range, then you'll turn the corner, and the double bowl sink would actually be looking out into the living room. So you're always kind of addressing people. You don't have your back to them. When we can do that, when space allows, we always try to do the L so we can kind of have people addressing people, you know, their visitors in there. So that kitchen opens up into the living room, which is going to have nice bright windows. There'll be carpet in the living room. We'll probably have a sheet good, you know, something that's very durable in the kitchens. And then usually right across from the kitchen, we'll have a small little foyer that you come into. It's got an entry closet. You'll have a very large bath. They'll all be very accessible, very big spaces. We'll have removable cabinets in every single one of them. Some of them will actually be ready, you know, already fit out for somebody that is actually in a wheelchair, so there'll be no cabinet underneath the lavatories. Those will have roll-in showers. We haven't got into the details, but we may have a lot more showers than bathtubs just because of, again, seniors. We'll have a couple of them, possibly in maybe the two bedrooms. And then we'll have a bedroom that's going to have a very large closet, probably 2 foot by 5 feet, maybe a little bit longer. We'll have usually a linen closet with a 5-shelf. We'll try and get a pantry with a 5-shelf. Again, we're struggling. You know, we got the 63 to work, and that's why we're at that strange number. It's as many as we could fit on the site while trying to give everything else. The two bedrooms obviously just have a corridor to get to the two bedrooms versus the one bedroom. And the studios are just wide open, so the kitchen will be open to the living room / sleeping area.
And it's much more information than I wanted, but that's great. So bedroom, living room, kitchen, bathroom. That's what we'll look for. And you started to address, and my other question had to do with accessible units for handicap accessibility. Do you have a sense of, is there a percentage that you were thinking of would be handicap accessible?
We usually target 5. I don't know if we stipulated what we're going to do. We usually try and do 5% mm-hmm. Accessible. We occasionally, you know, we'll do a hearing and visually impaired unit. I don't know if there'll be one or two of those. We haven't finalized numbers. And the main difference between the two of those, I mean, there's more visual strobes. Sometimes there's a bed shaker that may be tied to a doorbell, it may be tied to the fire alarm, those kind of things.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And my last question has to do with the affordability. One of the things that I struggle with here is more and more of what's called affordable housing here in Tompkins, in Ithaca particularly, in the city. The people who are really on the affordable end that receive subsidies, housing subsidies, are not allowed to live in those properties. So are you allowing for...
Oh, yes. We will be accepting residents with a voucher from the Ithaca Housing Authority. And we are within their payment standards.
Right.
Yes.
Within the guidelines that you have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. We have some staff members here. We have Lisa Holmes, who's the director of our county office for the aging. We have Jay Franklin, who's our director of assessment. We have Ed Marks, who I assume you've been dealing with, our commissioner of planning. And we certainly have our county administrator, Joe Mariana. And I wonder if any of them have any questions they want to ask at this point. If you do, could you go to the microphone, please?
Thanks, Mike. I'm Lisa Holmes with the County Office for the Aging. Just a follow-up question about Kathy's question about the property management. And I was just wondering, for a project this size and these number of units, would you have someone on site full-time or part of the time? I'm just curious what type of property management style and...
Sure. There would not be an on-site 24/7, but there would be someone on-site during regular business hours, if you will, and then, of course, we'd have on-call maintenance 24/7.
Thank you.
Joe Mariana?
I just have one question. It relates to the fact that this is a tax credit project. So I wonder if you can help us assess the risk of the project being delayed, if we miss a round of tax credit funding, or of even being scuttled if this doesn't find the tax credits that you need to make the economics work.
With regard to the timing of application cycles and what have you, what we've done is instead of, there's two types of tax credit, there's one where it's once a year you can apply for the 9% credits. We're not going that route because the whole schedule would be off. So what we're doing is going to Housing Finance Agency, which is part of HCR, and there's the 4% tax credits. That's an open window, so we're able to go. We've had extensive conversations with them. Carol has got them on speed dial about this project. So that particular financing portion of the project is an open window, and so we're going to be able to get that, and we'll be able to apply once we are selected.
And is there a risk that it may not be granted at all, or is it your sense that it's virtually automatic that you will qualify for it?
We feel strongly enough that there's nothing guaranteed. Yeah. However, we feel strongly enough that we're in good shape, and we've vetted this with the State Housing Finance Agency enough so that we feel confident that we've structured this as we have other projects which we've financed with them, so that we feel very comfortable with it.
Thanks. Ed Marks, our Commissioner of Planning.
Just a couple of clarifying things from your proposal. On the facade, the masonry, when you say the 50%, 90%, is that the first floor? Because when you look at the drawings, it looks like everything on is the cement siding going up from there. I'm just trying to understand that.
There is, yeah. So obviously we have stone on the first floor, so we're looking at the courtyard. Are we talking about the street facade?
On the front facade, it was 50% masonry, and on the ends, it was 90%. I'm just trying to figure out what part of the facade are you talking about. It's not clear what's brick and what's
point on both sides.
Cement siding right on here, these right here. From these pictures.
All
Okay, so let me get this pointer down here. So this area right here, these are the light-colored areas.
Right.
This is fiber cement siding.
Right.
We have stone at the base. We have brick that goes up to this, I believe it's this level right here. And then from that point, we're going up and we're doing a fiber cement siding up in this area of the gable right here.
Okay. That's always hard to distinguish. Thank you.
Okay.
You talked about the ability to meet 2030 district and about having individual furnaces in each unit. Have you considered the concept of being zero carbon ready, which means you don't depend on something that can't be supplied by a renewable energy source at some point in the future, which would probably mean something like air source heat pumps, which have been used in some projects, multifamily here? Has that been considered as a possible alternative? And can there be some efficiencies of not having to put in some of the infrastructure you'd have to put in for furnaces?
I'm going to start, but I'm going to need some help from Carl. So I'll never say no to that. I mean, I think we certainly could. Right now, to afford the project, we've got furnaces in. That's kind of the $10 to $12 a square foot. Anything else just is adding. It's probably going double the cost, and we just simply can't afford to fit that in there. I think it all depends. If we increase photovoltaics, we do that in the future, I think you certainly probably could. We're just trying to – I don't want to lead you guys down and say we're definitely doing it like maybe some other folks may be saying. I just want to let you know that we're striving, we're doing our best just because it's affordable. We don't have the pockets for it. Ground heat source, I mean – there's been no geotechnical report. We would obviously want to do that to see what our soils are. Anything is a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a half a dozen geothermal projects, hotels, school buildings, and apartments. And geothermal is great as long as your source for operating all the pumps is solar, because what ends up happening is the cost of the electric chews up all the savings from the heat that the earth gives us. So we're finding out that the infrastructure cost and the operating cost aren't there yet. And then also, you know, on off hours when solar isn't working, we don't have the storage of electricity we'd like to have. So, I mean, again, we say this all the time, we're not just builders, we own property, and we would love to never have to pay a utility bill because that's the cost that we all know is the most out of control in our lives. We just never know what it's going to be next. So we're looking at new systems all the time. They're evolving all the time. But right now, for this project to be affordable housing, these are the systems we have to use.
Okay. But you'd be willing to explore that further going
Absolutely.
Down the road if there was an opportunity.
They don't want to pay. Nobody wants to pay the bills.
Okay. Two quick ones that you may or may not want to delay till later to discuss, but you mentioned a confirming appraisal. Is that a requirement for your financing, that you have a separate appraisal of the property done? And if so, when would that occur in the process so that we'd know whether there was any issue there?
The appraisal has to be done upon submission of our application to the state, which would take place upon selection, so it'd be done in the July, okay. Immediately after being selected.
Okay, that's good. And you've requested a pilot. Is there any way the project could work if the pilot wasn't approved?
No.
Okay. Thanks.
The RENs would not work.
I'd like to now turn to the audience for questions. We have that one written question, and did I leave it up there with you, Kathy?
No.
See if we can find that. But in the meanwhile, if someone has a question, could you please step to the microphone and state your name, please, for the record? Tom
Sini,
thanks.
Hi, I'm Tom Sini from the DeWitt Park Inn next door. So naturally I have concerns about this, what I consider to be kind of a looming project. How close is it to our property line? You said 16 feet from the curb, but it wasn't clear from our line.
I believe we have it 15 feet off the side.
Which is what they're using.
I think it is. I think there's, 15-foot setback is what we're maintaining.
Uh-huh. And then during the building's demolition, there was a three-month, it looked like, scheduled time it was going to be demolished in. Is that all jackhammering, or is there some, you said there was abatement first, right? Is that noisy?
Not as noisy as removing the concrete, but there will be some noise involved in it. But the abatement process will be an enclosed process. In other words, it'll all be contained within the building, and we're going to have to cover everything up to make sure that nothing escapes.
Right.
Part of the abatement process. So then,
But you got to use your microphone.
Back to the demo process. The demo process, there will be jackhammering involved in taking it out. What I said before is we would meet with you. We would document everything associated with your building. And I know there's an inconvenience with the noise, but we would document, we would look at your building and just make sure everything's in good order. And then if anything ever happened, we would be there to take care of it. And that's typically what we do. All adjacent property owners, we meet with them. We go through the, whatever you want to show us, whatever conditions, we want to make sure that you're left exactly the way you were when we started.
Did, in your estimate, when you were doing your cost analysis, did you figure out about how many truck trips there were involved in this?
But I don't have that with me. Yes, I can get that to you, though.
Yeah, I would like to know. Yeah.
Tom, if you look at the up here, you can see the outline of the existing library.
Right.
Give you an idea about where you
well,
are.
Well, I couldn't really tell. So it's that darker area? Is the library? Or no?
It's actually it's the dashed red line.
The red line. The red line is the library. And the white building is the new building?
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, the problem is when you do those super, it's not exactly accurate.
Right.
I noticed that when you present this, there's no drawings showing anything but your building. So it helped me at least understand the scale a little bit better. Was there anything ever done like superimposing your concept on a photo of the block, say?
That would be done during the planning process, but we can talk about that. But when we do this for planning presentation, that'll have to be done.
Yeah, I would think, other than me, that the rest of the community would maybe like to see how it looks when it's in context rather than just point blank.
Mm-hmm.
And parking lot lighting, is parking lot lighting, is that like Walmart or...
No.
I'm hoping not. So obviously my interest is to have it shaded, have it maybe, I don't know if it could ever be turned off at night, probably not, but...
It probably can't be turned off at night, but they have to be full cut-off fixtures, so there's nothing spilling out towards the property line.
Right.
Since this is a lead for homes, we can't do that. We're not doing the Walmart lighting. These will probably be, we don't have a very big parking lot here on purpose, so I'm thinking maybe a 10 or 12 foot pole with a light on it. That's it. A couple of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's what I can think of right now. Thanks.
But good enough for seniors to see.
Yes, sir.
And be safe.
Hi. My name is David Murphy. I am not an abutter. It's a really interesting site, and so the projects have their intrigue. A few assorted questions. When we're looking at the top view here, and we see the old library building outlined in red, the proposed building, is that in white, or are what we're seeing in white the membrane roof, and then the mansard, is that darker section out?
What you stated lastly is exactly right. The white roof is that inside, that's the bathtub area, I call it.
Okay.
The dark roof around it is the mansard roof. It's, you know, probably a darker asphalt shingle. What Carl said earlier, you know, this is kind of representation where we've took an aerial photo and pasted our building footprint on it. We're just trying to show you, generally speaking, that we're smaller than the building footprint itself. We're not going to go out. I mean, we have to maintain that 16 foot on both sides or on both streets. We got the 15 foot to the side neighbor, and then we've got the road to the other side. So, yeah, I mean, the mansard roof looks like it goes out towards the road further than where the library is. That is kind of incorrect. We're basically doing the best we could for, you know, the time constraints we had.
Understood. I appreciate the clarification. The further back we sit from the screen, the harder it is to define. The contrast isn't perfect. Years ago, there was some proposals in the area where parking had to be added someplace, probably lots of projects. And they were looking at pavement that had its own drainage, not runoff those hardscapes and then drainage thereafter, but drain through pavement. Is that something that you're able to consider for a project like this?
Well, I mean, Carl's done some of this, but we did look at that, and it'd just be a maintenance problem with the road salt getting in and vacuuming it out. You're talking about a pervious concrete where it's more heavy aggregate, less fine aggregate, and things drain through. We've heard from a multitude of owners that it's a maintenance problem. It has to be vacuumed out a couple times a year. There's a cost to it.
I'm actually on the project we're proposing in Lansing. We are doing it because we don't have a choice. We're doing pervious paving. It's not something we want to do, but we have to do, and we're doing our own containment. The nature of the drainage on these city properties is most things are tied into the storm sewer system. And like Tim was saying, we're not increasing our impervious surface. We're actually decreasing it on this project. So the plan is to just utilize the storm sewer system. We could look at impervious. It's just with the road salts, it because it's pervious, as you can imagine, the water goes in, freezes, breaks it, and then you have chunks of pervious concrete. But we do it. We do have to do it sometimes.
What came to mind from a project long ago was in fact not concrete, was macadam type material.
That exists too, and it breaks up the same way. Because what happens is, again, in our climate, the water goes in, freezes, expands, breaks it, and then probably over a 2 or 3 year cycle is about what it lasts functionally. I mean, there are other systems. There's grass paved systems. The problem is they're incompatible with plows. That's the dilemma. We do use them in other markets, though.
I appreciate the better understanding. The existing old library building has has usable structure below grade. Can you speak to why it was elected to do slab on grade here? Not.
Sorry, could you just talk a little louder? I really can't hear you.
Pardon me. Mumbling is a nasty habit. The old library has a basement. You elected not to do a basement. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, to this project, there was no benefit to having the basement. You know, the way the project was, again, put together, we looked at all options for foundations, and after we take down the building, crush it up, we're going to use portions of that for fill, and that structural fill will be what we'll put our building on. The project didn't require a basement.
I'd like to get some more folks, please.
Very last would be the old library site is, you commented earlier that it's very much built for a library, and even the county, I imagine, has found difficulty using it for other purposes. Your building, as years go by, decades go by, onward, can you foresee an alternative use with that structure? And I'll leave the mic.
I think the alternative use for that particular building is other types of housing. We have forced replacement reserves that we have to fund on an upfront and annual basis. So we will have we'll be forced to take care of it, and we'll have the savings to take care of it. But fast forward 30 years, I can't imagine what other types of use at this point in time other than residential.
We have at least two more people that want to ask questions. And I have a written question, and I just want to kind of get a feeling from the group. Do you see a need for an executive session tonight?
I do not.
Okay. And let's continue. Nancy, please.
Okay. Hi.
The microphone works better if you take it away from the stand. I'm Nancy. I'm Tom's wife, and we own the B&B next door. And I guess one of my questions was touched on a little bit was distance, because what he was saying, you can't really visualize it the way you've overlaid it, because the way it looks right now, it's like right next door, like right. The round thing right now is about 3 feet away from our property line. So I'm just curious about, are you going to be 15 feet then? All right, doesn't look like it there. Okay. So my other question is about the elevation. There's that wall between our property and the old library on the south side. And there's a pretty big drop-off, and I wondered how you were – I don't see anywhere any pictures or anything. Do you know how you're dealing with that wall and that drop-off elevation where it goes down to the first floor now?
That means the plan is to remove the plan is to remove everything and then bring the site up to the surrounding grades. So the plan is to work our grades into what the grades are to the adjacent properties.
So you're going to bring the grade back up?
Back to, well, pretty close to what the adjacent properties are.
But then you're going to have a grade, you're going to go grade down to the road? I mean, they have that step down for a reason, I think.
No.
No?
No, it's pretty, around that site, it's pretty low.
Well, so if you remove the wall, then you're like, there's about 6 feet from where our yard is and where it drops down, and you remove the wall, then how are you, I'd like to know how you're going to protect our yard. Because yard is all naturalized. There's lots of wildflowers there and bulbs that have been there for a long time.
We put in temporary shoring.
You put in what?
Temporary shoring. It's a temporary wall.
Uh-huh.
We put it in, and then we take the other wall out.
Okay, and then how do you deal with all the trees on the property? Are all the trees coming out that you have there? Have you been able to identify any trees that might you be able to keep, like the beautiful magnolia that's blooming in front of the property right now?
Typically what we do on a project like this is we bring in an arborist to look at the health of the large trees. Okay, so if the arborist comes in and says the large trees are either, healthy and we can save them as part of our plan, we do. As far as the magnolia, I can't comment on because I'm just not, I can't, is it possible that maybe a tree spade could pull it out and we could reuse it? Yes. Would it be? I don't know. Again, typically when we start a project like this, we get an arborist involved to kind of identify the condition of everything on the site.
Well, that's why I've been having a hard time by looking at your floor plan or whatever, like trying to figure out what's happening around the building and all the existing trees. So I was very concerned about the trees because there's a lot of really nice old trees. They provide a lot of shade. There's a lot of birds back there that I care about.
I know it's important, but can we keep the question, please?
Okay. And Tom asked about the pile drivers. And I don't know that we quite answered the question about noise. Like, would there be any working on the weekends?
Typically not until we're enclosed.
Mm-hmm.
So typically when we're doing the project, I mean, it's not a type of project that we can say, oh, geez, we're going to work overtime on Saturdays because that's double time or time.
Right,
so
right.
Typically towards the end of the project, just because of the nature of staging certain types of work, painters, carpet people, cabinet people being in at the same time, weekends are a good time to make up some of that time.
Do you usually start working in the mornings?
7 a.m. to 3:30 or 8 to 4. They can, you know, we can set the hours, but it doesn't have to be a rigid time. We can pick a time. So 8 to 4 could be a time.
We serve breakfast at 8:30, so you're welcome to come over breakfast. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Alphonse Pieper, and I'm the Executive Director of Historic Ithaca. So I just have two questions. You talk about looking at the surrounding neighborhoods and the materials that are being used. So you've pulled in stone and other shapes and so forth. But one of the unique things about our neighborhood here is also the molding profiles, the window surrounds, and the relationships, you know, from the belts and so forth. And so I'd like to speak. Right now it sort of shows as just a tight skin. So I'd like to get a little more information about the detail around the windows and the doors and what you're thinking about.
We haven't selected the windows. You know, we won't do that until if we're selected for the project. We will certainly work with you on those. We don't know what type of window they'll be other than they're hung windows. If there's certain details that you're looking for that we can incorporate to the project, we can do that. If it's a freeze board up the gables, we can certainly look to incorporate that. We are trying to match this. This is kind of a transition. You know, it's going down to single family. That's kind of why the building is designed the way it is. But, yeah, we certainly could look at those details. Everything is not totally refined, set in stone at this point.
Okay. I'm not here to try and be the designer or anything. It's just, and then the other thing is there's four floors here. The first floor is parking. So are the windows going to be solid there, or they'll be grilled, or
At this point in time, they do have a mesh over them. They are not windows.
Okay. So on the left, on my left there, it looks like a window on the first floor.
That's correct. We did have two options at one point. This is option two of that. We were trying to work with additional partners, and that's left over from when it might have been an office space. It's no longer the case. It's all parking, so there will be mesh.
So that will be a mesh there. So
correct.
That will be some type of mesh or screening. Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
We did receive the following question. It's rather broad, so you can respond to it however you think it's appropriate. From Mr. Jeffrey Lawless, his question is, some developers decided to reuse more of the existing building than others. Besides explaining the financial and sustainability considerations, can you please address your decision architecturally, aesthetically, and socially? So I think he's asking your decision not to reuse all or part of the existing building.
Well, I did talk about this earlier, but just to reiterate it, you know, we did look at the existing building extensively. I still have the sketches from when we did multiple iterations, went back and forth with Carl, Rochester Cornerstone Group. I think the most we could possibly get was 30. It just it financially did not make any sense. I had to cut windows in at different, facades. There's not a lot of fenestration on that library, so that was, that's one of the reasons we were providing a floor in there.
We're going down the affordable road. I think if we were going to sit here and these were going to be luxury apartments or $500,000 for sale units, certainly we could put, half or a third as many in. But the idea for our mission was affordable housing, to get as many units as we could on the property. And for the to provide as many affordable housing units as we could. So that's why we went down the road. Tim did, like he said, umpteen studies. We spun this building every way we could to try to get them in the building, because for us, the structure's solid, So it would have been nice to reuse it.
Can you repeat the other two parts of that? There was a socially.
He just said architecturally, aesthetically, and socially.
All right. I mean, architecturally, we're trying to tie in to the fabric of the neighborhood. We're using a lot of the materials, the stone. We haven't picked the brick. We're going to try and find the brick that kind of works the best with the neighborhood. Obviously, we would work with planning, and we work with all the different boards. Socially, I mean, we We're trying to celebrate the corner of it where we've rounded the building. We provided kind of an entrance. I feel like we brought the building down in scale. It's four stories, but we brought it down by using a bunch of different fabric materials to try and bring a human scale down to this versus just, wow, it's a four-story building. We tried to carve it up, create jogs in the facade, different material changes. So I think socially, I think we've kind of tied in as much as we possibly could to the human scale in the neighborhood.
Thank you. Would you like to wrap up, or are you finished? We're pretty close to 7 o'clock. Actually, it's one after, so we don't want to keep people on a Friday night forever.
30 seconds?
Certainly.
We do appreciate the opportunity to present this. We had some great questions, and there's some people who will be working with our neighbors and the Ithaca Historic. We'll be listening very carefully because that's the way a good project gets done, especially in a neighborhood like this. So I know there's been an awful lot of work done by your committee, and certainly you've got three good proposals. We look forward to hearing a very positive response when you're ready.
Again, we thank you for your submittal. We've got a couple other submitters, too, and the committee will be considering them and making a recommendation of some kind to the full legislature and as soon as we can.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Anything else? All right. Many thanks.